This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody out there at TFMR, and welcome to another edition of our Thursday conversation series. And this week, I think you're really in for a treat, and we're going to have some terrific information for you. Guy that I've known now for a couple of years has, David, maybe I shouldn't say you've made yourself into a palladium expert. You just, there aren't very many out there, and you've uncovered a lot of information about palladium over the last 12 or 24 months. And he's kind of helped lead me into following it over the last year or so. And so this is a big treat to get a chance to talk to David Jensen, who is, he's a metal market analyst. He also runs his own private mining company. So he's been in the precious metals industry for quite a long time. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what runs these markets and why they are run the way they are. And he knows what's going on in palladium. And so we thought it'd be beneficial at this point to spend some time talking about it. David, thank you so much for carving out some time to visit.
My pleasure, Craig, and thank you for the kind introduction.
Hey, my friend, you know, before we get started talking about the specifics of palladium, what makes you this situation so interesting is because the what I call the fractional reserve and digital derivative pricing scheme that is what drives gold and silver also drives platinum, palladium, copper, really everything else. I know you've got some thoughts about the scheme in general and why prices are managed through futures in the first place. So let's just start there, and then we'll go to the specifics of palladium.
Starting back in 1980, the Federal Reserve had to raise interest rates to 9% above the inflation rate. So they ran interest rates up to about 19% when inflation was 10%, and they had to do that to get investors out of gold and back into bonds again. And clearly that was a problem at the time. The level of debt in the world was about 150% of GDP. And today we've got debt as a function of GDP at over 340%. Very different situation. So back then, because they had to raise interest rates so much, they were looking at gold. And we look back, Ronan Manley of Bullion Star has done some excellent work looking back through historical memoranda from the Bank of England. And you see in the Bank of England, which is the world's primary gold market there in London, which has the world's primary gold market in London very close to it, we see in their memos that they talked about containing the price of gold as what they called a general contribution to the struggle against inflation. And that's a direct quote there from one of their internal memos. It's quite funny because we know that inflation, the classic definition of it is an increase in the money stock or the outstanding money, and that things bubble, you know, they get bubble economy starting and speculation in the markets, then eventually real goods rise and real good prices and commodities rise in the economy thereafter. So, you know, what happened after that 1980 memo was 7 years later, 1987, the Bank of England ended up creating the London Bullion Market. And that bullion market, instead of trading gold as they had done prior to that, started to trade what are called unallocated spot contracts. And those are really promissory notes, and they don't have to have, you're not trading gold per se, you're trading a promise to exchange gold. And that really allowed the bullion banks to, according to the internal documents from the London Bullion Market, and also from their 2011 London Liquidity Survey, that they were trading over 200 million ounces of these gold promissory notes a day. And essentially what they did then was take a real asset, which is gold, and change the trading into a virtual type of trading where the promissory notes could be created without limit, and thus you could contain the price of gold and then erroneously struggle against inflation. What they're really doing was struggling against the warning signal that they were running loose monetary policy, and that's what's led to this massive global debt now, is they shut off the warning systems, and globally we've increased debt ever since, and we are now at the precipice where now we're starting to see interest rates rise, and we're facing the consequences of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've often referred to it as alchemy, in that the price of gold was managed by the U.S. in the 1950s through supplying physical to maintain the peg, and then that failed. And yeah. So we decided to not go it alone anymore, so we invented the London Gold Pool with seven other countries, and that worked for 7 years, and then that failed.
Right.
And then with the introduction of futures contracts in 75, and then these promissory notes, like you said, it's all gold exposure, unallocated gold, in this system now of unallocated accounts, promissory notes, forward contracts, futures contracts, all of that that's termed gold exposure has allowed them, again, it's alchemy. They've created gold from nothing.
Yeah, and the LBMA, by the way, their quarterly magazine is called The Alchemist. Yeah. It's like they're rubbing it in our faces.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, and so this draws then our interest to palladium as the canary in the palladium mine, or the potential palladium bullet, because that palladium market is structured the same way as is gold, as is silver, with this fractional reserve derivative pricing scheme that relies on some bit of physical background to create kind of an illusion of delivery. And that's where we've always hoped maybe silver would provide a silver bullet. Instead, maybe it's palladium. Now, you first turned me on to palladium, I think, about a year and a half ago. And I had followed it a lot last year. Remember, it got up to that old all-time high in January of 2018. It got up to $1,100 an ounce, which was the same high it reached in 2001. Under similar circumstances, as you pointed out, we got to $1,100 in 2001, and yet the Yeltsin-led Russian government kind of rode to the rescue with physical supply and brought the market back under control, and it fell sharply over the next 9 months back down to 400. Well, we got to 1,100 last January, and it looked then like a double top because we fell back to 800 an ounce back last August. And then once it turned is when I started getting my interest again, and I know you've been following it all along. I first wrote about it in October of last year for Sprott Money, pointing out all of the things that we're talking about now, you know, that lease rates are soaring, the futures board's in backwardation, everything points to a physical supply problem, not a futures right. trading bubble, spec bubble or something. This is a physical supply problem. I know you've been following that. So what more can you tell us?
Well, I mean, the first thing that really drew my attention, focused it on it, was the pop in the lease rate there in London. And as you say, that's a physical supply problem. It's a physical market in London. It's the dominant palladium trading platform globally. And the former CEO of Johnson Matthey noted that the major above-ground stocks had been moved from Switzerland to London between 2009 and 2013. And so when you've got the location of the major stocks that are available to market in a location where the lease rate starts to surge, indicating that there is a shortage or a dearth of the availability of these bars to market, you know that that's a pretty good signal that you've got a problem in terms of supply, right? This is not a secondary or tertiary market. This is the physical market. And so, you know, the lease rate spiked to 17%, and I start looking at the supply demand dynamics. And you know, and Johnson, the retired CEO of Johnson Matthey as well, he said in 2017, he said, you know, over the last 10 years, we've burnt off 10 million ounces in the above ground stocks to meet the demand for the market. And he was saying, I'm not saying the above ground stocks are gone, but you can't run a market like this forever. And meanwhile, they have ever since. He was referring to 2016 and prior at the time. And now we're in 2019, and Johnson Matthey came out 2 weeks ago now saying that projecting a deficit in the market of another million ounces this year in a 10 million ounce a year market. So, you know, they're continually burning off these stockpiles, and what's happening is that eventually you run out of available metal, which is where we are now. So We've seen the lease rate surge to, you know, very high, like over 30% a few months ago, and it's back at about 10%. But the thing to keep in mind here, Craig, is that, I mean, palladium was 850 in August, and you know now we're in the 1550 range, and yet the lease rate is still 10%. So we've gone up by 80% in the price. Yeah. And they can't get the lease rate reliably below 10%. We're right at like 9.5 to 10% now, depending on the tenor of the lease. So, you know, we've got a problem. We need higher prices and we need more supply. The problem with price containment with these unallocated contracts is that ultimately you set the price too low because there's infinite paper available. And so you get overconsumption and underproduction. And that's a problem that we've got right now. Many of these mines in South Africa are shut down and are full of water because the price has been too low until now. And so, you know, we've got this chronic problem, and the only way to solve it is with higher prices. And I think they have to be much higher than they are now to solve the problem.
And these lease rates that you're talking about in London, when it's 10% lease rate, what that means is I'm a bullion bank, and I'm on the hook to deliver, let's just say, 1,000 ounces today to somebody, and I don't have it, so I have to go borrow it from somebody so that I can meet that delivery demand. And my pledge is to return that 1 month later on a one-month lease. And the 10% is I have to return 1,100 ounces to you.
Well, that's a per annum rate. So if you borrowed it for a year, you would return an extra 100 ounces. Okay. So, but it's
in ounces. That's the thing that people need to understand. I mean, it's a spiraling issue.
Yeah. So a metal lease, a leasor, a person that leases it out, I'll get away from the legal term, but the person that leases the metal from the person who owns it ends up having really a constructive short, pardon me, again, of palladium, because instead of buying it and delivering it, they've borrowed it now and given it away, and then they've got to re-enter the market to purchase it later, plus that interest component that you mentioned. So really, these are shorts, and nobody knows exactly how large the short position is in the market, both from hedge funds who might be shorting the metal, but also from the physical borrowers who ultimately owe the metal back. And you know, we can see, for instance, from the ETFs that they've gone from about 3 million ounces down to about 700,000 ounces over about a 2.5-3 year period. And so there's, you know, over 2 million ounces that is believed to have been secured by hedge funds who have taken delivery of the metal from the ETFs, lent it out in the market, and then they can pocket the guaranteed return that they have on the metal as long as they can get the metal back. So, you know, you've got numerous things, and even with this supply added to the market, they've still been running, you know, year over year, about 1 million ounces. I checked the UK export import figures through to the end of November, and they indicated that they had shipped about 1.1 million ounces more out of the country than they had imported. Yeah. So that's an indication again of a deficit to the primary market supplier as well.
We referenced earlier that, as legend has it, in 2001. Boris Yeltsin was convinced to supply palladium into London to get him off the hook 18 years ago. I would say Vladimir Putin probably won't be as easily convinced. And as you mentioned, South Africa, besides all the strikes that they have going on at present, also has shuttered a lot of mines. So it doesn't appear to be an easy physical solution here, other than just getting to such a high price that physical magically appears, but I don't really even see that either. Do you?
Well, I mean, ultimately, let's say you double the price, just for argument's sake. So from round numbers, 1500 to 3000 an ounce. Right now, a compact car has about $150, $150 US of palladium in it, and an SUV has $300 worth. So if you double the price, it's not going to make a material difference to the selling price of the car. The essential thing is you've got to have the actual metal in the car to ship the car. You can't ship it without a pollution control device.
So demand continues, really, regardless of the hike in price. And so where this gets interesting, and you and I can't know where a breaking point might be. I mean, it wasn't at $1,200, and it's now not at $1,500.
Right.
But at some point, can you envision the way I'm looking at it through palladium colored glasses, but, can you envision a point where this scheme, you know, of the promissory notes and the leases and everything else collapses just due to lack of available palladium? The COMEX is drained, the ETFs are drained, the LBMA is drained. There just isn't any metal left.
Well, yeah, we're seeing the lease rate's telling us. I mean, when they're going over 30% in London, that means there's a problem in the market. And, you know, especially when, you know, a 10-year note delivering you under 3% interest, it gives you an idea how high the stress is. And so the problem is that we've got too much consumption and too little production. So we need higher prices to give us both additional supply coming to market and demand destruction. It'll be a combination of those two that bring the market into balance again. But we need to open more palladium mines. We need more supply. Europe is bumping up their air quality standard, and it's going to drive higher palladium loadings on the existing models of cars that are going to be produced then. So, you know, the shortages in the market, it's around 10% of the market without considering the lease overhang of the metal that has to be returned to the owners. And so we need drastically higher prices in the market to balance the market. And what's happening here, Craig, is that you can contain metal prices with unallocated paper contracts as long as the market is flush with metal. And what's happening now is that we're seeing shortage of metal in the market. And what that's doing is it's killing these bullion banks. It's stopping them from entering the market and pounding the market with unallocated paper. Because if you sell unallocated contracts into the market, those who need the actual physical metal say, thank you very much, I would like to take delivery now. And that's when you get a default situation. So I think that the bullion banks are basically handcuffed in being able to try to manipulate this price down. And that ultimately you get a failure of using unallocated paper to contain the price. And I think it's going to knock on into platinum and ultimately into silver and into gold. The question is, how long does it take? But we know that there are large unallocated positions in the market where people are not taking delivery of these other metals.
Yeah.
What it's going to do is advertise very quickly the money printing problem that we've had for decades, ever since the creation of this price containment mechanism in London. And, you know, the COMEX, I don't even mention the COMEX because, you know, 0.04%, this is Bullion Star's work. I mean, they noted that 0.04% of the contracts there actually saw gold delivery.
Right.
So they call it the commodity exchange, but it's more like a comedy exchange.
Right.
Because there's no real metal that's being traded there for the price discovery purpose.
Yeah. It's a sham. They create this illusion of delivery.
Yes.
Every other month where, you know, 1 month JP Morgan's house account stands for delivery and the house account of HSBC issues the contracts. And then 2 months later, HSBC stands for delivery and JP Morgan issues them back to create the illusion. It is an interesting scenario though, because the amount of alleged gold or silver in the vaulting structure of the COMEX versus the amount of digital ounces that are traded in open interest, if you add up all of the register and all the eligible, it's about 3.5 times, or the total amount of digital ounces is 3.5 times what's there physically for gold.
Right.
It's 5.5 times for gold, 3.5 times for silver. It's 68 times for palladium.
Yeah, but I think you're kindly adding in the eligible, which I don't think you can, because that's client metal that's maybe never available to market.
Exactly. But we're just going to add that in because everybody always wants to talk about, well, yes, you can always move it around. Okay, we'll add it all together. So as supplies disappear, I mean, it sure wouldn't – I mean, the position limit's only 50 contracts, but you would think that if you're on the hook, if you're really desperate for some palladium in London – you'd look at the ETFs. You know, I found one last week from Aberdeen that allegedly has 137,000 ounces in it. You'd think you'd try to get it out of there. You would think you'd actually want, you know, some of that 15,000 ounces that's marked registered. You'd want some of that out of the COMEX. And at some point, like you said, you would think that, you know, if there were ever such a thing as bond vigilantes a couple of years ago, that there'd be precious metal vigilantes. It would go, wait a second, hold on just a minute. This whole system's a fraud.
Yeah, it's Gresham's law in motion. And we know that bad money drives out good money, and that bad gold or bad palladium, which is the paper unallocated palladium, drives the real metal out of the system. So we have a mispricing, malstructuring of the entire precious metals mining complex that has been caused by this use of unallocated contracts to basically fix the price of precious metals to allow a 30-year plus bubble in the global bond market and an explosion in asset prices, and basically the stripping of wealth from Main Street and the transference of that wealth to the financial yep. operators of the financial system.
Yep, no doubt about it. David, let's begin to wrap up with this. Earlier this week, I mean, people on my side, we've been following the chart of palladium, and it's, you know, where people have tried to say it's parabolic and all this kind of stuff. No, it's just been a steady progression within a channel that's easily found and drawn and derived by anybody that wants to draw it on a chart. And earlier this week, it moved up to the top of that channel, just as it did back in January. And no surprise today, it has fallen back in toward the middle of the channel as it's down 2.5 or 3% as we record this on Wednesday. Now, there are a lot of generalists out there that have seen this rise in palladium and think all of a sudden they're experts and they're trying to call it a bubble and a speculative bubble, as if, you know, every shoeshine boy and taxi driver in New York City is buying palladium contracts on the COMEX. I mean, none of that is true at all, but yet there are still a lot of analysts out there that now are suddenly claiming it's a bubble and all that kind of stuff. What would you say to them? I mean, other than what we've already said, I mean, they're going to do is they're going to get their rear ends handed to them if they go in there and try to short palladium contracts, or if they advise their customers to short palladium contracts. So what else can we say to these people about how this is not your normal, you know, little speculative thing?
Yeah, I'd say lease rate in London is 10%, and there's an insufficient metal in the market to bring that lease rate down to zero or into the negative regime, which it is when there's an excess of supply in the market. So it's not a bubble, because the demand for bars is so great that you cannot get adequate supply in London, and people are having to borrow it at a crazy interest rate to get a hold of it. So when that interest rate on the lease metal goes to zero, I'd say, okay, well, it looks like the market's in balance. And it's because of these unallocated contracts that I typically try to ignore the price action. I'm following the lease rate to see what is the true availability of metal in the market. And platinum now has gone above zero in terms of the lease rate. It should be negative, and I think it's probably the next one to fall. But we know that this bad paper pricing system, this bad money system, to use Gresham's terminology, is going to ultimately result in a move in the metal price because of the disappearance of the metal from the market.
And David, going forward, what should people be watching? I mean, it's those lease rates. It's the backwardation on the board. I doubt the LBMA publishes lease rates on a daily basis.
No.
How does one find that kind of information?
Well, I'm posting it daily at my Twitter account, and not daily, but I try to get it up a couple times a week into the Twitter account there, post those numbers so that people can see what's going on. But typically they're not available. But I post the 1 month, 3, 6 and 12 month lease rate, so people can get a look at it, and we can see that the rate started to rise above a zero back in 2017, and the trend has been ramping higher and higher. I mean, there was the blow off that I mentioned to 34% a few months ago, but it came down to 7, and now it's up at 10% again. So even with the jump in the price, we still have inadequate metal to the market. So we're going to need much higher metal prices here to solve this problem.
And if anything, I just want to make clear again to everybody listening, because I've tried to make this clear in everything I've written and said about palladium over the last 6 months. Nobody here is trying to tell you to rush out and buy yourself some palladium.
Go up to
a site like JM Bullion or Sprott Money or something and try to buy an ounce of palladium. Hey, knock yourself out if that's what you want to do. But we're not encouraging anybody to try to make fiat off of this. This is just
we've got to kill demand and increase supply. That's what has to happen to bring the market into balance.
Right.
Now, if there's a economic dislocation and auto demand falls off a cliff, that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
If the price rises for a sustained period, which it appears to be in the process of doing, you're going to get additional supply sold into the market, and you're going to get additional metal produced by the mines. So, but we've got to get through some bumpy road here in terms of clearing these shorts out of the market the people who have borrowed the metal and owe it back, they're going to get increasingly squeezed and increasingly nervous as they look at the price sustain a higher and higher level. We're going to see a blow off at some point. I don't think we've seen anything near a blow off so far. We've just seen, as you know, a very linear and very structured and systematic move higher in price.
Right. And those shorts, bank shorts in London that we're talking about, anybody that's trying to short it on the COMEX is taking the same risk. And so if I were to advise anything, I'd say just whatever you do, don't try to play that game. You're asking for trouble if you're going to short into a market that is obviously physically stressed. David, I guess, and again, the last piece of the puzzle is if physical supply does not materialize before anything else is all gone, you know, the ETFs, the COMEX, London, we've got a potential force majeure situation. And again, maybe those, we'll call them precious metal vigilantes will show up and start to look around and go, well, wait a second, aren't gold and silver structured the same way? And maybe reality will finally come back to the precious metals pricing system.
Yeah, we may not hear of force majeure. I mean, the COMEX rulebook is written so that they can force cash settlement in numerous different ways, that the directors of the COMEX can force that. There may be opaque events in the market that we don't hear about, mm-hmm. but ultimately we need higher prices to solve this problem. The issue that's going to be facing the bullion banks is that the much higher prices in palladium draw attention to the complex and the problems in the complex that they've created using these unallocated contracts, and the leverage that's in those means that physical demand showing up in the other metals, I think, is inevitable. They're going to lose control of the ability to price physical metal with paper, and they're going to be prevented from entering the market with these unallocated contracts ultimately. I think it's already happening in palladium. I think that they've had to back out of the market. They can fiddle with the price for a day or two, but ultimately you cannot have a large exposure that's not allocated in a market in which there is severe shortage. Yeah. And we're seeing that in palladium.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend, this has been, I think, very helpful for me. And I can imagine anybody listening has learned quite a bit, too. It's going to be a rather interesting year, no doubt about that, across all of the metals and all of the markets. But I got a sneaky feeling you and I might have to talk again before too long. You keep watching and doing what you do on your end. I encourage everybody to follow David Jensen on Twitter. It's Real David Jensen, is it not? Isn't that how people find
it? It is. It is.
Yeah. Just search him on Twitter and follow him, because you're a great source of updates and real-time information there. And if this keeps on going, we're going to have to get back together sometime in the next couple months and talk about it some more, because this is a real potential threat to the bullion banks and this whole pricing scheme. And maybe we'll continue to make some progress in that regard. But until then, David, thank you. I mean, this has been wonderfully insightful and valuable information. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for your time, Craig. I enjoyed it.
And from all of us here at TFMR, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.